Imagine, you find out there's a vicious rumor going around about you, and it is a complete lie.
Right, something totally fabricated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And your very first instinct is probably to grab a megaphone, restate the rumor so everyone knows what you're talking about, and just yell, "This is false."
Which makes perfect sense logically.
Right. But, well, according to a massive new intelligence report, by doing that, you actually just made the rumors significantly stronger. Welcome to the deep dive.
It's entirely counterintuitive, I know. We assume that sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? And that blasting a lie with a pure fact will simply dissolve it. But human cognition, and honestly the modern information environment, they just do not work that way at all.
Which brings us directly to the source material for today's deep dive. We are unpacking an incredibly comprehensive 2026 research report titled Counterpropaganda, or in Chinese, Dui Kan Suan Chuan.
Yeah, a really fascinating piece of work.
It really is. It was jointly published by AmericanNewspaper.org and AmericanTV.org.
Yeah.
And, our mission for today is to shortcut your path to being a well-informed citizen in a world that is, frankly, absolutely swimming in manipulation.
Swamped in it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to understand exactly how societies can defend themselves against disinformation, but without accidentally becoming the bad guys in the process.
Because we live in an era of unprecedented information overload. I mean, understanding the actual architecture of counterpropaganda, it isn't just an academic exercise for policymakers anymore.
No, not at all.
It's essential for your own cognitive defense. If you don't understand how these narratives are constructed, you're highly vulnerable to them.
Absolutely. But before we jump into the mechanics, there's a crucial grounding rule we need to set for you, the listener, right up front.
Right, very important.
This report analyzes the historical and strategic behaviors of various governments, the US, the UK, Russia, China, and others. We are absolutely not taking any political sides here today.
None at all.
We're simply unpacking the historical analysis and the strategic frameworks provided in this source material. Like, we're looking at the engine of the car, we're not endorsing where it's being driven.
Yeah, that distinction is vital. Our goal is to dissect the tradecraft and, the psychology of how information and counter-information actually operates on a structural level.
Okay, so let's unpack this starting with the very first hurdle. Because the biggest vulnerability you have right now is probably a fundamental misunderstanding of what propaganda actually is.
Yes.
And obviously, if you don't know what it is, you definitely don't know how to fight it. So the report heavily explores the Chinese term for counter-propaganda, zhuge, Duyin Kan Xuan Chuan.
Yeah.
How does that reframe our understanding here?
Well, the linguistic breakdown of that term is really illuminating. So, Dui Kong means to resist, confront, or counteract.
Okay.
And Xuan Quan means publicity, advocacy, or propaganda. So, put together, it means communication undertaken to resist or neutralize another propaganda effort.
So it's not just checking facts.
Exactly. Conceptually, it is vastly broader than what we in the West typically call, fact-checking.
And that seems to be the core analytical mistake we all make, right? We equate counterpropaganda with just proving a specific fact wrong. But wait, so if someone looks you in the eye and lies to you, your first instinct shouldn't just be to correct the data point.
No, because you have to look at what the lie is actually trying to accomplish. I mean, propaganda is rarely just a localized false claim. It's a frame.
A frame.
Yeah, it exploits emotion, identity, historical grievance, social proof. So a factual correction usually leaves that deeper underlying narrative entirely intact.
Man, it's like trying to put out a grease fire with a glass of water.
Oh, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Right, because you're addressing the fire part, but you're totally ignoring the chemical reality of what's actually burning. You
Yep.
throw the water on it, and you don't extinguish the flame, you just cause the boiling grease to explode and spread everywhere.
That analogy perfectly captures the dynamic. You're reacting to the visible flame, but ignoring the fuel source. So, let's say a propagandist claims a certain minority group is responsible for a spike in local crime.
Good.
The specific data point they use may be a fake crime statistic that might be entirely fabricated. But the frame, the narrative of social decay, the fear of losing physical safety, that's the grease.
Right.
If you just release a statement saying, actually, the data shows crime is flat, you haven't addressed the visceral fear the propagandist activated at all.
Which connects directly to everyone listening right now. Just think about your own daily digital life.
Ah.
When you see a family member share something totally wild on social media, what is your default reaction?
You drop a link?
Exactly. You drop a Snopes link in the comments, and it rarely, if ever, works, because you're fighting their identity, their sense of belonging to a group, not just a spreadsheet of data.
And bringing a spreadsheet to an emotional street fight is a guaranteed way to lose.
Yeah, totally.
To understand why those factual corrections fail so spectacularly, we have to look under the hood of the human brain. We really need to understand the cognitive wiring that makes us so susceptible to false frames and how a successful correction actually has to be structured.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Because dropping that Snopes link, or, you know, shouting into the megaphone, can often make things actively worse through something psychologists call the illusory truth effect, or the familiarity effect.
Yeah, this is key. The human brain is fundamentally lazy.
Guilty as charged.
Right. It relies on heuristics, or mental shortcuts, to process the massive amount of information we encounter every single day. And one of the most powerful shortcuts is fluency, basically, how easy a piece of information is to process.
Okay, so how does that work against us?
Well, when you needlessly repeat an adversary's slogan or a false claim just to say it's false, you are making that claim more familiar to the listener. And our brains accidentally translate "this feels familiar and easy to process" into "this must be true."
It's the classic psychological trap. Don't think of a pink elephant.
Exactly.
By just mentioning the falsehood to correct it, you've already painted a giant pink elephant right in the middle of their mind.
You're doing the propagandist's marketing for them. And this cognitive quirk is exactly why the report advocates for a very specific structural solution when you absolutely must correct a falsehood. It's called the truth sandwich.
Okay, so if I can't just shout fake news or repeat the lie, what is the actual order of operations for a correction? Walk us through the recipe for this truth sandwich.
It requires strict discipline. You always start with the verified fact, the truth. That is your top slice of bread. You establish reality first.
Start with the truth. Got it.
Then you briefly mention the myth, using as few words as possible, just to identify what you're debunking. That's the filling.
Like, don't dwell on it.
Right. Next, you explain why the myth is wrong. And finally, the bottom slice of bread, you end by restating the accurate account. But crucially, you must provide an alternative causal story. You have to fill the explanatory vacuum.
Ah! I can't just take away their pink elephant. I have to give them a bright blue rhino to look at instead.
That's a great way to picture it, yes.
Because the brain hates a void.
Yeah.
If you just destroy someone's explanation for an event, even a false one, they'll just cling to the lie unless you replace it with a new, complete story.
Exactly. Without a replacement narrative, the brain reverts to the familial lie. Now, while we're on the topic of correcting people, the report tackles a massive psychological myth that paralyzed communicators for years, which is the backfire effect.
Oh, man. I admit I believed in this one for a long time. The idea that if you fact check someone, they don't just ignore you, they actually dig their heels in and believe the lie more strongly than before, it just made it feel like debunking was completely pointless.
Yeah, early psychological research terrified people with that exact conclusion. But the report clarifies that newer, much larger studies show the backfire effect is largely overstated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Corrections generally do improve factual accuracy. If you show someone credible evidence, they will usually update their internal factual ledger. The catch is that improving their factual accuracy does not necessarily change their underlying identity or their behavior.
Wow. What's fascinating here is that people simply do not process political or social information like detached statisticians. Beliefs don't just hold data. They act as tribal badges, their group membership signals. The report calls this identity protective cognition.
And it makes sense, right? Evolutionarily, belonging to the group meant survival. Being perfectly accurate about an abstract fact didn't. So if accepting your fact check feels like a betrayal of their tribe, the listener's brain will perceive the correction as an existential threat.
They'll have to reject the messenger to protect their identity.
Exactly.
Knowing that psychology is the actual battlefield completely changes how you view history. If human cognition is this defensive fortress, we have to look at how nations have historically tried to breach those walls. And the report takes us through this incredible timeline, starting with World War II and the British Political Warfare Executive.
Yes. The British World War II efforts are an absolute masterclass in bypassing identity protective cognition. They utilized a tactic called black radio, spearheaded by a man named Sefton Delmer.
Right.
Now, this wasn't the BBC broadcasting objective news from London. Delmer's team set up radio stations that explicitly imitated insider German voices.
So they pretended to be patriotic, diehard Germans broadcasting from within the Nazi regime.
Exactly. They adopted the persona of the ultimate in-group messenger. And by sounding like loyalists, they totally bypassed the psychological defenses of the German listener.
Because they sounded like the try.
Right. Once they had that trust, they used it to attack the corruption of Nazi officials, highlight elite hypocrisy, and subtly spread rumors that destroyed military morale. They fought the regime from the inside out, psychologically speaking.
See, I have to push back on this, though. Isn't that just using lies to fight lies? Like, setting up a fake radio station and pretending to be the enemy feels completely deceptive. How does a democracy justify crossing that ethical line, even to fight fascism?
Well, that ethical tension is a central theme of the report. What works tactically in a state of total existential war actively contradicts the transparency required in a peacetime democracy.
Right.
I mean, the British demonstrated absolute tactical genius with black radio, but you cannot export covert deception into a modern democratic framework without eventually destroying your own institutional credibility.
War is a different beast entirely. You can't operate a covert psychological operation against your own citizens and expect them to trust you later. Which perfectly sets up the shift during the Cold War, because the report details the Soviet Union's use of active measures, specifically focusing on this massive, covertly planted conspiracy theory, the claim that the U.S. military genetically engineered the AIDS virus.
Yeah, this is Operation Infection, and it is a textbook active measure. It wasn't just a rumor, it was a highly engineered information cascade. The KGB didn't just announce this on Soviet state television. They started by planting a forged letter from an anonymous American scientist in a small, obscure English language newspaper in India called The Patriot back in 1983.
Okay, so they planted the seed in an entirely different ecosystem so it wouldn't have Russian fingerprints all over it.
Precisely. Then they just let it sit. Years later, Soviet media discovered this article in the Indian press and reported on it.
Oh.
Then they hired pseudoscientists in East Germany to write reports validating the claim. By the time it reached Western media, the origin of the lie was completely laundered. It just looked like independent global concern.
The genius of that is terrifying. But the U.S. response to Operation Infection is highlighted in the report as a model of effective counterpropaganda. Because the U.S. didn't just stand at a podium with a megaphone and scream, "We didn't invent AIDS."
Right. They understood that a simple denial just repeats the pink elephant. Instead, the U.S. government formed the Active Measures Working Group, and their strategy was entirely forensic. They didn't just debate the biology of the virus, they exposed the tradecraft of the lie.
I love this part.
Yeah, they documented the initial planting in the Patriot newspaper, they mapped the dissemination chains, they traced the funding of the East German scientists.
So instead of arguing with the magic trick, they turned on the stage lights and showed the audience the wires holding the illusion together. They targeted the source's credibility by showing exactly how the Soviet intelligence apparatus manufactured the deception.
Exposing the architecture of a lie is vastly more effective than just countering the claim. But, as the report notes, even if you expose the trick brilliantly, the messenger delivering the message still matters. And after 9/11, in the fight against global terrorism, Western governments hit a massive wall called the messenger problem.
Right, because if a government slapping its official logo on a fact check immediately triggers identity protective cognition and ruins trust, what do you do? The report looks at the effort to counter terrorist narratives from groups like Al-Qaeda and later ISIS.
The U.S. State Department tried pushing out direct counter-messaging, you know, slickly produced videos explaining why ISIS was bad. But if you are a marginalized youth in a community already deeply suspicious of Western foreign policy, a video with an American government seal on it has zero credibility.
Zero. It triggers immediate identity protective rejection.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how factually accurate the video is if the audience inherently distrusts the person holding the projector.
Wow.
The realization was that effective counterpropaganda in that context requires trusted in-group validators, defectors, local religious leaders, community voices. The government essentially had to get out of the way, hide its logo, and quietly support the grassroots networks that actually possessed the cultural credibility to be heard.
So if official government logos triggered defensive tribalism, who is left to tell the truth in a credible way? And that exact void is what triggered the massive shift we see in modern Ukraine from 2022 to the present. The report emphasizes the explosion of OSINT open-source intelligence.
Yeah, OSINT represents a fundamental restructuring of how truth is established during a conflict. Historically, you relied on a centralized government ministry of information to release a statement, and you just had to trust their authority.
Right.
Today in Ukraine, we see a decentralized network of independent journalists, satellite firms, amateur researchers, and ordinary citizens verifying the battlefield in real time.
They're using commercial satellite imagery, geolocating shadows on a video to prove what time of day it was filmed, matching street signs to Google Earth. It's basically crowdsourced counterpropaganda.
It is. And the psychological power of OSINT is that it completely bypasses the messenger problem. It shifts the burden of proof from blind trust in an authority to auditable reality. A citizen researcher doesn't ask you to trust them. They post the raw satellite image and the coordinates and say, check it yourself.
You don't have to trust the person. You just have to trust the pixels. It's a pluralistic verification system where no single institution monopolizes the truth.
Right.
But as amazing as OSINT is, the speed and scale of manipulation have fundamentally changed. From the radio dial of World War II to the algorithmic feed of today, we are now standing on the digital and generative AI battlefield.
The digital environment itself has been weaponized. I mean, the report details how social media algorithms completely altered the physics of propaganda. They made the distribution of disinformation endogenous to the users themselves.
Right.
The platforms are designed to maximize engagement, which means they systematically reward outrage, novelty, and polarizing interactions.
So the platform's basic objective function acts as a hyperdrive for the most sensational, divisive lies. Like, a calm, nuanced truth sandwich is boring to an algorithm. And inside that highly charged environment, the report calls out memes as incredibly potent weapons. Why are memes so dangerous?
Because memes compress complex, highly charged political narratives into incredibly dense, shareable emotional symbols. A massive government white paper debunking an economic claim might be factually superior, but it is socially and emotionally weaker than a culturally fluent meme repeated by a popular influencer.
It's the spreadsheet versus the street fight all over again.
Exactly.
And now we drop generative AI into this volatile mix. The report notes that Gen AI drops the cost of creating personalized, localized, multilingual persuasion to near zero.
We're moving from mass propaganda to mass personalized propaganda. You can deploy 1,000 AI agents to have deep, conversational, persuasive arguments with real voters simultaneously, adapting to their specific psychological vulnerabilities in real time.
That is terrifying.
But the secondary effect of AI is perhaps even more dangerous to society. It's what researchers call the liar's dividend.
Oh, this concept blew my mind. I mean, explain the liar's dividend.
Well, because the general public is now acutely aware that high-quality deepfakes and AI-generated audio exist, manipulative actors can exploit that skepticism. Imagine a corrupt politician is caught on an authentic, perfectly real recording accepting a bribe.
Okay.
10 years ago, that ended their career. Today, they simply step up to the podium and claim, that's not me, that's a malicious AI-generated deepfake.
Oh, man. The mere existence of the technology provides a built-in alibi for actual bad behavior. It breeds this generalized cynicism where people feel they can't trust the evidence of their own eyes and ears anymore.
It degrades the very concept of shared reality.
But wait, isn't AI also the ultimate shield here? Like, if I have an adversarial bot generating fakes, can't I just use a defensive AI to detect the bot networks and spot the deepfakes? Fight fire with a highly advanced digital fire hose?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we see an escalating arms race. Yes, AI is a powerful defensive tool. It can cluster narratives, detect coordinated bot network patterns at superhuman speeds, and translate foreign propaganda instantly. But the report issues a stark warning: automated counter-propaganda systems can also hallucinate.
Ah, they can overclaim attribution. Right, like flagging a legitimate citizen's angry post as a foreign psyop.
Exactly. If you let an AI automatically flag and censor content, it will inevitably silence legitimate democratic speech. You cannot just set an algorithmic guard dog and walk away. Human review, independent verification, and strict accountability are entirely essential to prevent the defense from becoming a weapon itself.
Which brings us to the most delicate, and frankly, the most important part of the entire report, the democratic paradox. With AI supercharging the threat matrix, the temptation for governments to seize direct control of the information space is overwhelming. The logic is understandable. The digital environment is too dangerous. Foreign actors are flooding the zone. We need to lock it down.
But doing that risks destroying the very democratic principles they claim they are trying to protect.
That is the core paradox. The exact tools needed to fight manipulation, aggressive intelligence collection, platform contact, content labeling, identifying covert actors are the exact same tools that can be effortlessly abused for domestic censorship, crushing political dissent, and establishing partisan narrative control.
The report compares us to authoritarian models like North Korea or historical totalitarian regimes. Those regimes achieve success in controlling their information environments, but it's a completely hollow success.
Because it is success measured exclusively by compliance, not persuasion, authoritarian regimes maintain an information monopoly through raw coercion, punishment, and total censorship. They aren't winning debates in a free marketplace of ideas. They are simply making it physically or socially ruinous to disagree with the state.
So what makes democratic counterpropaganda fundamentally different then? If a democracy and an autocracy are using some of the same basic communication strategies to defend their narratives, where is the line?
The boundary isn't determined by what an institution calls itself. It is defined by structural constraints. True democratic counterpropaganda demands transparency, press freedom, and the absolute right of citizens to openly contest official claims. The report offers a brilliant operational test for this.
That's the test.
If a government's counter-disinformation program cannot tolerate independent journalists investigating its evidence, it is no longer counterpropaganda. It is drifting into authoritarian information control.
It has to survive the sunlight of independent scrutiny. Like, if the government fact-checkers are afraid of being fact-checked, you have a massive problem.
Precise.
And that structural shift changes how we have to measure success in this space, too. We have to stop measuring success by shallow metrics like views or likes or retweets.
Those metrics just measure exposure, which is largely irrelevant. An adversary's troll farm might share your brilliant debunking video just to mock it, driving your views through the roof, but you haven't persuaded a single mind. You've just contributed to the noise.
So what does this all mean for us? It sounds to me like the ultimate goal of counterpropaganda isn't to build a louder, more aggressive megaphone to shout down the bad guys. It's to build a better, more resilient immune system for the public.
That is the ultimate synthesis of this entire 2026 report. The strongest long-term form of counterpropaganda is emphatically not better propaganda. It is the cultivation of a resilient information environment.
An environment where the grease fires can't catch because there's no fuel. Where deception is structurally easier to detect because institutions actually show their math and disclose their evidence, like the OSINT community.
Right.
Where independent journalists can dig into claims without fear of reprisal, and where citizens are intellectually empowered to challenge what they are told without being labeled a threat.
It is about systemic, societal health. You cannot possibly SWAT every single mosquito in a swamp.
Yeah.
You have to drain the vulnerabilities that allow them to breed in the first place.
And that brings us to the final thought we want to leave you with today. We've talked about the grease fires, the pink elephants, the active measures, and the AI arms race. But the conclusion of this report actually flips our entire understanding of gullibility on its head, and it really shifts how we should think about our own daily habits online.
Yeah, we culturally assume that the opposite of being gullible is being deeply, universally skeptical. We think if we simply trust nothing, we can never be fooled. But the report warns that true resilience is not universal skepticism. In fact, universal skepticism actively helps the propagandist.
Because if you believe nothing is true, you will eventually just accept whatever narrative is the loudest or whatever feels the most emotionally satisfying in the moment.
Exactly. True resilience is calibrated trust. It is a dynamic confidence that rises when a source provides auditable evidence and strictly falls when that evidence fails or is hidden. So the central question for you to mull over today as you scroll through your feed is this. Have you done the hard work of building up your own calibrated trust, or have you taken the easy way out and just stopped believing everything?
Are you navigating the chaos with a compass based on evidence, or have you just closed your eyes entirely? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the frames, keep learning the mechanics of the magic tricks, and above all, keep calibrating your trust. We'll see you next time.